Welcome to an all-new Nevada Newsmakers. I'm Paul Enos, filling in for Sam Shad. Today, we have our Senate Minority Leader and candidate for Lieutenant Governor Michael Roberson talking about sanctuary cities and the breakup of the Clark County School District. That's next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
Welcome to an all-new Nevada Newsmakers. This is Paul Enos filling in for Sam Shad. Today, very happy to have on our show State Senator and Republican Minority Leader Michael Roberson, who actually a week ago today made an announcement. You're running for Lieutenant Governor, it looks like, Senator.
Well, hello, Paul. Good morning. I am running for Lieutenant Governor. I'm excited about this campaign that we're just now starting. I think it's very important that we have a Republican governor and Lieutenant Governor going into 2019. And, you know, my good friend Mark Hutchison has decided to not run for re-election. I think with my experience as both a business attorney helping Nevada companies start and grow their businesses, and my experience as the Senate Republican leader for the past 5 years, I'm uniquely qualified to serve as Lieutenant Governor. It's a position which has a hand in both economic development. You know, the Lieutenant Governor is the chairman of the Nevada Tourism Commission and also serves on the Governor's Board of Economic Development, but also the legislature. The Lieutenant Governor serves as the president and presiding officer of the state Senate. And because of my relationships in the legislature, I think I'm going to be in a great position to help the next Republican governor advance a conservative, pro-growth, and pro-business agenda.
Well, and you were there this time and really kind of the tip of the spear on defense against a lot of the things that the Democratic legislature was doing this time. And, you know, we're able to secure a number of vetoes, you know, keeping all the Republicans in the Senate solid on bills. How was that, you know, working in the minority and working with the Democrats this session?
Well, Paul, I can tell you this past session was something I've never seen before. I've been in the legislature since 2010. This was the most pro-felon, anti-business legislature in the history of this state. No question about it. That is not hyperbole. Thank goodness the governor vetoed 41 bills this session, which is a record for sustained vetoes. The previous record for sustained vetoes, I think, was 23 or 25. So he vetoed a large number of bills, and thank goodness he did. I mean, there are so many things that they did that was just a it would have been very bad for the state of Nevada. But I'll just run through a few. They tried to tax and then ban plastic bags. They tried to end Nevada's energy independence by banning fracking, which would have hurt rural Nevada significantly, would have cost jobs. They tried to pass a pre-crime bill that would take Nevadans' guns away, law-abiding citizens here in the state. Prior to any criminal activity, anything inappropriate being done by those folks, they would have had their guns taken away. They tried to impose higher prevailing wage on school construction, which would have made building schools, and we need more schools here in the state, much more expensive. They tried three separate times to raise our property taxes. We were able to stop them. They tried to roll back my lobbyist gift ban that I passed in 2015, which says if you're a legislator, you cannot take a gift, you cannot even take a cup of coffee from a lobbyist. They actually tried to repeal that.
Well, and hey, Michael, I kind of appreciate that. My expense count's gone down a little bit in terms of taking folks out to lunch.
Well, it's about good government. And it was just baffling that they thought they could get away with repealing the lobbyist gift ban. But again, we stopped them from doing that. I got to tell you, Senator Ford, the current Senate Majority Leader, actually wanted to let felons vote from prison while in prison, like they do in Vermont. I don't know about you, but I don't want to see Nevada become more like Vermont.
100%
agree. And, you know,
agree.
The big thing they tried to do, which, you know, I fought them all session, I'm going to continue to fight them, is this attempt by Senate Democrats to make Nevada a sanctuary state.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So, you know, we hear sanctuary cities all over the place where you don't have the local police cooperating with the federal authorities. If you have an illegal immigrant committing a crime, they try to do that, but on a statewide level here in Nevada, correct?
They did. And the bill they sponsored, Senate Bill 223, which almost every Senate Democrat sponsored, would have prevented it's so ridiculous. They would have prevented local law enforcement from just simply cooperating with federal agencies, including ICE and Homeland Security, after a person had been arrested in our community of a serious crime. And only after our local law enforcement became aware that this person who had just committed a crime, in many instances a violent crime, they then became aware that that person also was in our country illegally. Well, what SB 223 would have done was said you can't contact federal authorities and cooperate with them so that they can come take this dangerous person out of our community. And I want to make sure that, you know, luckily we stopped in this session, primarily because law enforcement was up in arms. From every corner of this state, law enforcement came to Carson City and said, we will not support this. You're handcuffing us. You're going to make our communities less safe. You're trying to tell us how to do our job. And we don't need a bunch of politicians in Carson City telling our local sheriffs and police departments how to keep our community safe. And so I want to make sure we prevent the Democrats from passing a law like this in the future. And the best way to do that is to prohibit these kinds of sanctuary city and sanctuary state policies in our state constitution and provide in our constitution for the attorney general to investigate any sort of violation of this prohibition and to have enforcement by our attorney general and our state courts. And so I'm leading an effort to prevent sanctuary cities in Nevada. We want to get this on the ballot in 2018 and then again in 2020 and put this into our state constitution. I believe I'm going to have support from law enforcement and widespread bipartisan support from Nevadans all over this state for this ballot initiative. But it's very important because we just saw what the Democrats tried to do last session. If they're in a position to do it next session, if there's a Democrat governor and a Democrat legislature next session, we've got a real problem on our hands.
All right. We are here with Senator Michael Roberson. We're talking sanctuary cities and his run for lieutenant governor. We are going to be right back on Nevada Newsmakers.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
We are back on Nevada Newsmakers with State Senator Michael Roberson. He is running for lieutenant governor in the 2018 election. Senator, thanks again for being on our show.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Let's talk about some of the fights that that you've had at the legislature. And, you know, 2015, a big one that I know has impacted me tremendously is being able to use, they call it a transportation network company. Uber and Lyft is what normal people call it. You did lead that fight. Let's talk a little bit about that and some of the efforts to roll it back.
Yeah, sure. Well, my good friend, Senator James Settlemyer, and I did lead the fight to open the transportation market to allow Uber and Lyft to serve Nevadans. And it was not easy. We had an entrenched taxi cab cartel fighting us every step of the way because they didn't want the competition. It's as simple as that. But we prevailed, and as a result, thousands of new jobs have been created here in Nevada. And now Nevadans have a new safe transportation option, and we've actually seen a decrease in DUI fatalities as a result. So from my perspective, that's real economic development, and it's also serving to make our community safer.
Now, hey, I agree.
But I will tell you, I'm sorry to interrupt, but in 2017, believe it or not, the Democrats tried to run them out of town.
No, we saw that in kind of a last ditch effort, you know, from some of the folks in the assembly to get rid of it. And, you know, I love it. It's life changing for me. I mean, my personal hell is sitting on that rent-a-car shuttle in August, sweating through a suit and sucking up diesel fumes at the McCarran Airport. So thank you to Uber and Lyft for making my life
Paul,
easier.
I can tell you it's a great benefit to senior citizens. I have lots of constituents where I live in Henderson who told me and keep telling me that, you know, they can't drive a car. They're really confined to their home. They would try to call a taxi cab to get to the pharmacy to pick up medicine or get to the grocery store. And you couldn't get taxi cab service, at least not very much taxi cab service, to Henderson. And I'm sure that's the same way throughout rural Nevada, northern Nevada. And now with Uber and Lyft, they can make a phone call or, you know, use the app on their phone and now have someone to take them to get their medicine, to take them to get their groceries. So it's something that was long overdue. It's helping Nevadans in every part of this state. And it's shameful that the Democrats, after taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from the taxi cab industry, tried to run Uber and Lyft out of Nevada. Again, they failed. But that's something we have to watch going forward to make sure they don't try it again.
You know, Senator, something else that was done in the 2015 session, we heard a lot of noise in the interim that, you know, with the Democrats in control of the legislature, they were going to roll it back. So I was very impressed to see what you were able to do in terms of getting the leadership of all houses, both political parties, they're at the table supporting reorganizing the Clark County School District. Can you tell us a little bit about where those efforts are today?
Sure. Well, you know, reforming and improving education has been one of my prime focuses during my legislative career. And in 2015 alone, as Senate Majority Leader, we worked with Governor Sandoval to pass 25 significant education reforms. The one that I'm probably most proud of is the reorganization or the breakup of the fifth largest school district in the country, the Clark County School District, which has been bloated and top-heavy, too much money in central administration and not enough of the education dollars in the classroom to help our kids. And so we passed a law to implement a reorganization, a decentralization of the school district in the waning minutes of the 2015 legislative session. But that was just the start. Then we formed a bipartisan committee. We started meeting in the fall of 2015. We had dozens of meetings over the course of the year. And in September 2016, we finally passed regulations to implement this reorganization. Then the Clark County School District promptly sued the state because they didn't want to do this. So on a bipartisan basis, we passed we put these regulations into statute into 2017. It undercut the lawsuit. And finally, we're seeing progress on this reorganization. But I'm still chairing this interim advisory committee. It's still a fight. This is going to be a years-long process, but it's worth it because we've got 320,000 kids in the Clark County School District. They're not getting the education they deserve. Too much money is being spent by the bureaucrats. We've got to move that money and that autonomy to the school level so that parents and teachers and folks in the community closer to the school can make those education decisions.
Hey, Senator, you know, it's, you know, I think it's something that's long overdue. Really appreciate what you're doing because, you know, I think we all want education to improve. But it's, you know, when you look at, you're right, the where we spend the money and the bloated bureaucracy, you always wonder, you know, are we throwing it down a black hole?
Well, that's right. And frankly, we're too low in the rankings. This is a big part of why I want to run for lieutenant governor, by the way, because I see improving education as a big driver of economic development in this state. Companies want to know that when they move to Nevada, they will face a business-friendly tax and regulatory environment, and we have one of the best here. But they also want to know that they're going to find a skilled and educated workforce to draw from, and they're going to want to know that they and their employees will be able to send their children to good schools. And so if I'm elected lieutenant governor, I intend to continue my focus on education, especially as it relates to economic development, and work with the next Republican governor and the legislature to improve education throughout Nevada.
Hey, Senator, thank you very much. That's where we have to leave it. Good luck to you, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Everybody, Senator Michael Roberson, now candidate for lieutenant governor. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel. As always, Lucas Folletta is here with McDonald Carano. Dory Guy is former Washington County Democratic Party chair. And Mary Lau is the president and CEO of the Retail Association in Nevada. In our last conversation, we were discussing opponents in the lieutenant governor's race and talking about Oscar Delgado as being a likely Democratic candidate for that race against Michael Robeson.
I also believe that Chip Evans has announced that he's going to run for lieutenant governor on the Democratic side, too.
Mary, your thoughts on that race? Yeah. I mean, do you think somebody's going to come in on the left of Robeson because of the commerce tax? I'm sorry, on the right of Roberson.
I was going to say the left of Roberson. Yeah. Now you've stumped
me. This is my 12th chair I'm taking
today. First time in 20 years. it's not going to do any good. Chip Evans certainly isn't going to do that if Chip's going to run and stuff. But I don't know that he gained a lot of notoriety because he only ran in CD2.
That's correct.
So he's not known in Southern Nevada and stuff. And then, you know, and Roberson, because he's been up here so much and because he's in the press so much from being majority leader and then minority leader, or, you know, back and forth, I really think it's his to mess up because, you know, I think he wins.
Let's talk about healthcare in the state. Mm. And it's, you know, interesting. The governor got another insurance company to come into the state, but with no competition. Where do you think rates are going to end up being?
Well, I'm certainly not a healthcare expert, so it's hard for me to predict where rates are, but I will say that just my instinct is that in the absence of competition, rates are probably not going to be where we want them to be. I will say that I think it was a remarkable effort on the governor's part to get an insurer to provide coverage in those counties. And, you know, it's a problem across the country, and it's I think almost every county now has at least one insurer in the market, except for, I think I read the other day, one county is still left with no coverage.
Right.
So obviously,
interesting, because I thought that they were now going to cover everybody, this new company.
Well, they might, but I'm just saying in the United States, I believe
I'm
there's...
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I really have to commend the governor for at least finding one insurer. As far as the rates are concerned, I think we'll see them higher than where they should be.
Yeah, and plus you the know, fact that they
no
can control the dialogue.
You
no
bet.
Competition. What are you getting for that policy? It is a combination of, you know, Medicaid and then this policy. Is it just a basic policy or what? And again, he did a good job to negotiate it. It looks good in print.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the lady who's running the Silver State Exchange on the program, and she was talking about how she was not in favor of block granting it back to the state, which is something Dean Heller was talking about. What are your thoughts about that, Mary?
Well, again, you have to be able to cross state lines in order for insurance to really become affordable. Now, block granting it back to the state is for the Medicaid provisions of that, and that's going to be hard to let go of. You grab that tiger by the tail, you do not want to turn around and take your hands off and say, give me a moment here.
Right.
So I don't know how they're going to get out of that. It was... at the time, it looked like a good idea, but you knew it was going to, federal dollars were going to dissipate on that, and you had to, sort of an overconfidence on where our dollars, our state dollars, would get to.
Dory?
I totally agree with Mary. I mean, you know, we need some competition. And also, crossing the lines, we need to be able to do that, too. And
well, what the problem really from the Silver State Health Exchange was that they need a comfort level at the federal level that these subsidies are going to continue. And until we have that, then the insurance company is going to do whatever.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the entire system is too unpredictable to ensure quality outcomes, whether you like, you know, the policy as it exists right now or not. I mean, the fact is, it seems to me that we can't keep going through this every 3 or 4 years and having massive fundamental changes in the way that we provide funding for these services. And we can argue about how much to spend, but I mean, we're turning things upside down every few years, and it's tremendously disruptive to the industry and to the level of care that people are trying to receive.
Bottom line, it's really screwed up.
Yeah, there you go, Dory.
But, you know, it's interesting. Mary, you know, your organization represents chain drugstores, and it seems like the pharmacists are getting more and more involved and being more and more helpful in so many different ways in my dealings with them over the last couple of months. That it seems like the pharmacy industry is realizing that there is huge opportunity for them with all of that's going on.
Well, no, the pharmacy industry has realized that for a long time, and that's why they train their pharmacists like they do. They're doctors of pharmacy. Mm-hmm. It's called PharmD and stuff. It's just been, it's medical issues are just pure hell when it comes to the legislature, and it all becomes territorial, and patients go, you know, it kind of goes out the window. But that's what the pharmacist is trained for, and that's what they do. And the more collaborative they can be with the medical community, the more patient outcome gets better.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you all very much. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
On that next show, Sam's going to be back with Heather Korbulik, who is the executive director of the Silver State Health Exchange, talking Obamacare in Nevada. Thanks for logging in and listening to Nevada Newsmakers.